The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Thursday. Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. And it's a crazy day. And I know I could start off every show saying the same exact thing and I wouldn't be wrong. Things are out of control, and it's because we've got an out-of-control madman in the Oval Office. There's a great op-ed at the New York Times today by David Leonhardt. He's the guy who's been keeping track of all of the lies that the president tells. Yes. David Leonhardt has a piece today called Time to Talk Impeachment. And it's not what you might think, although it's close. What he writes is, let me share this with you. It's not very long. He writes, a few weeks ago, I read a short new book by the legal scholar Cass Sunstein titled simply Impeachment. The book doesn't mention the president once. Sunstein started writing it, he told me, partly because he was alarmed by what he considered reckless talk of impeachment during Trump's first weeks on the job before he had started doing much. Sunstein's goal was to lay out a legal and historical framework for thinking about impeachment, independent of any specific president. I've been thinking about the topic a lot since finishing the book, and I want to recommend both Sunstein's book and a Vox piece published this morning by Ezra Klein. That would be this morning, where Ezra Klein also wrote about impeachment. To be clear, he writes, I think it would be a mistake for Democrats to put much energy into impeachment right now because it's not going to happen. Republicans control Congress and show no interest. But I also think it would be a mistake for Americans, regardless of party, to be in denial about the governing crisis our country is facing. Let's admit it. Trump is behaving in ways that call for serious talk of impeachment. If you read Sunstein's careful history of impeachment of when the founders believed it was appropriate and necessary, I expect you will come to the same conclusion. And here's where it gets really good, where I fully agree. Trump disdains the rule of law and he lies constantly. Multiple high-level Republicans, including some who work in the administration, consider him unfit for the presidency. His behavior in the last couple of days highlights the unfitness, an irresponsible provocation of the Muslim world, a lie about NBC News making up stories, a ridiculous new claim that the tape of him bragging about molestation is a hoax, an insult at a ceremony to honor Native Americans. It's time for Congress to take the crisis seriously. It has many options short of impeachment, starting with clear warnings from senior Republicans about Trump's unacceptable behavior. If those measures work, I'd be thrilled and surprised. If they don't work, maybe Republicans will become more comfortable with considering the ultimate constitutional remedy. Here's Klein from Vox.com. Quote, sometimes I imagine this era going catastrophically wrong, a nuclear exchange with North Korea, perhaps, or a genuine crisis in American democracy, and historians writing about it in the future. They will go back and read Trump's tweets and his words and read what we were saying, and they will wonder what the hell was wrong with us. You knew, they'll say, you knew everything you needed to know to stop this. And what will we say in response? And here's another one. There are plenty of people who simply should not be president of a nuclear hyperpower, and Trump is one of them. This is a truth known by his staff, known by Republicans in Congress, and known by most of the country, that so few feel able to even suggest doing the obvious thing and replacing him with a Republican who is better suited to the single most important job in the world is bizarre. Bizarre. And that's what we're facing with this president. it's bizarre behavior. And there's a warning from Maggie Haberman at the New York Times today saying that she thinks he's going to get even more outlandish, more insane in his behavior once he's given a few victories. And it looks like he'll have a victory on this tax scam bill, because today John McCain came out and said he's voting in favor of it. Believe it or not, John McCain, the man who gave such an impassioned speech about regular order, is giving is going to vote yes on this plan that held no hearings, had minor debate. In fact, I wish I could find Dianne Feinstein's tweet of a few minutes ago. I don't usually quote Dianne Feinstein, but even she said something to the effect of they're still making changes in it. There's no scoring. There's no there's so much information they don't have, and they may vote on it as soon as tonight, either tonight or tomorrow morning. Yeah. Not only that, Lisa Murkowski has come out in support of this bill as well, leaving it the only one who seems to be up in the air right now is Susan Collins. And one vote, and we don't know which way she'll vote. She may do the wrong thing here. It's very possible. And she just may vote for it as well, even though it includes not only cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at Twitter as we're talking. Here's someone named Alex who just tweeted, "Congrats to John McCain's children on their soon to be tax-free inheritance." Because while this will cut taxes on the wealthiest, us poor people, those of us struggling to get by, we're going to be the ones hit the hardest. Not only that, it will trigger cuts in Medicare and Medicaid. And as Marco Rubio admitted, this will be the framework for them going back and doing their entitlement cuts, you know, the gutting of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. What Republicans have wanted to do all along, Donald Trump, the candidate, said they would never do. But looks like that's their goal all along. So it's, I don't know, we go from bad to worse on a day-to-day basis. I wasn't going to do this, but I think I will. See how far I get into it. I've had a rough time since the election. It's been over a year now, and I've gone through something of a breakdown. You can hear it in my voice. My voice isn't what it used to be, and you can hear it in the way I speak. I don't have the confidence that I used to have to do this show. I'll keep doing it because it's what I do and what I know how to do, but it's been really, really difficult. And the thing is, when I talk to people, I'm not alone. So many of us are having a hard time just dealing with this assault on our sensibilities, assault on our democracy, assault on our way of life. And this is where we are right now. Yeah, I pay taxes so the rich don't have to. That's a new bumper sticker that was just suggested in the chat room. Oh my goodness! There's so much that's wrong that's going on, even when something good is going to happen, like it looks like Trump may finally get rid of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. The bad news is, he'll put the current CIA director Mike Pompeo in. This is a guy who believes torture is a good thing. And then in at the CIA would be Senator Tom Cotton. It just goes from bad to worse. And when you think things can't get any worse, Trump opens his mouth again. Oh, boy. So, our only hope is the midterms, that we can turn things around, at least turn the House around. But Politicus USA just put out a tweet. Here's how bad the Republican tax plan is. People making $40,000 to $60,000 a year will pay for tax cuts for the rich. This is what we're looking at. It is opposite world. You know, I've talked about opposite world a lot in the past.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
Well, you know what? I mean, we'll see what happens in November of 2018, because that's our last best hope to turn things around even a little bit, to survive through this this Trump era. And I hope we can make it, because if I don't know what the alternative is. Howie Klein is coming up. He'll tell us about some of the good people who are running in 2018 for the House that could allow us to flip it. We'll get with Howie right after a look at what's news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Senate on Wednesday voted 52-48 to open debate on the Republican tax bill, setting up a likely vote by the end of the week. In a speech in Missouri on Wednesday night, Trump said the bill would cost him a fortune.
America's tax code is a total dysfunctional mess. It is riddled with loopholes that let some special interests, including myself, in all fairness, this is going to cost me a fortune, this thing. Believe me. Believe me. This is not good for me. Me, it's not so. I have some very wealthy friends.
Liar.
Not so happy with me, but that's okay. You know, I keep hearing Schumer, deuces for the wealthy. Well, if it is, my friends don't know about it.
The Washington Post fact checker says that's false and gives his statement four Pinocchios. A new Reuters Ipsos poll released on Wednesday finds that 49% of Americans aware of the Republican tax plan are opposed to it. 29% support the plan and 22% say they don't know. One major sticking point is how the bill deals with the federal deficit and the national debt. Senator Bob Corker wants to add a trigger mechanism that would raise taxes automatically if economic growth targets aren't hit in the future to offset a higher deficit. The president slammed British Prime Minister Theresa May on Twitter after Britain criticized him for retweeting anti-Islam videos originally posted by a leader of a British far-right fringe party.
U.S. President Donald Trump says his retweets of a British ultra-nationalist fringe group's videos are justified, as both the UK's conservative government and their opposition unified in condemnation of their closest ally. Prime Minister Theresa May's office stated that, quote, it is wrong for the president to have circulated the unverified videos, which purport to show Muslims committing violent acts. The president hitting back, responding, don't focus on me, focus on the radical Islamic terrorism in Britain.
Trump's tweet drew outrage reactions in Britain, including from Brendan Cox, husband of lawmaker Joe Cox, who was murdered in 2016 by a Britain First far-right extremist. Quote, you have a mass shooting every single day in your country. Your murder rate is many times that of the UK. Your healthcare system is a disgrace. You can't pass anything through a Congress that you control. I would focus on that, he said. The White House defended the retweets by Trump. When asked about reports that the videos were not real, White House spokesman Sarah Sanders told reporters it didn't matter.
So it doesn't matter if it's a fake video.
Look, I'm not talking about the nature of the video. I think you're focusing on the wrong thing. The threat is real. And that's what the president is talking about, is the need for national security, the need for military spending. And those are very real things. There's nothing fake about that.
Does the president
Sorry, guys.
Thank you.
But that says the need
justify the
ends.
That's not what I said. You're putting words in my mouth. I said that the threat is real. The threat needs to be addressed. The threat has to be talked about. And that's what the president is doing in bringing that up.
In the wake of another intercontinental ballistic missile launch by North Korea, the UN Security Council held an emergency meeting on Wednesday where U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley warned that the North Korean leadership would be utterly destroyed if war were to break out.
Yesterday, the North Korean regime made a choice. It chose to feed its nuclear aggression. It chose to thumb its nose at the civilized world. It chose to challenge the patience of a world united against its recklessness. We have never sought war with North Korea. And still today, we do not seek it. If war does come, it will be because of continued acts of aggression like we witnessed yesterday. And if war comes, make no mistake, the North Korean regime will be utterly destroyed. The continuing development of these missile systems demands that countries further isolate the Kim regime. So today, we call on all nations to cut off all ties with North Korea. President Trump called Chinese President Xi this morning and told him that we have come to the point that China must cut off the oil from North Korea. That would be a pivotal step in the world's effort to stop this international pariah. China must show leadership and follow through. China can do this on its own, or we can take the oil situation into our own hands.
Matt Lauer was ousted Wednesday from his job co-hosting the Today Show. Thursday morning, Savannah Guthrie shared a statement from her former colleague.
There are no words to express my sorrow and regret for the pain I have caused others by words and actions. To the people I have hurt, I am truly sorry. As I am writing this, I realize the depth of the damage and disappointment I have left behind at home and at NBC. Some of what is being said about me is untrue or mischaracterized, but there is enough truth in these stories to make me feel embarrassed and ashamed. I regret that my shame is now shared by the people I cherish dearly. Repairing the damage will take a lot of time and soul searching, and I'm committed to beginning that effort. It is now my full-time job. The last 2 days have forced me to take a very hard look at my own troubling flaws. It's been humbling. I am blessed to be surrounded by people I love. I thank them for their patience and grace.
After the announcement of Lauer's firing Wednesday, Variety ran a story accusing him of crude and habitual misconduct with other women around the office. Multiple other stories of particularly lewd and crude behavior have surfaced since the news of Lauer's firing broke. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right, for a little bit more of what's happening in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at TalkMediaNews.com, and Victoria Jones is on the line today. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Nicole.
Hey, what a day, huh?
Every day seems to be what a day
it is,
doesn't it?
It really is. There's always something. It's looking like the Senate may vote on their tax scam bill as soon as tonight, huh?
Yeah, and it could be one of these voteramas, you know, where they can attach as many amendments to it as they like, and they would just go on voting. So it could go all through the night is how that could go.
Wow. And it looks like it's looking like they have enough votes. John McCain came out today and said he was going to vote in favor of it, as did Lisa Murkowski, that some of us were counting on to do the right thing here.
Yes, Lisa Murkowski said she would vote for it once it looked like she was going to get drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge. That was a couple of days ago, and John McCain said today that he would be on board with it. And a holdout still is Susan Collins. She is still saying she has problems with the bill, but they can afford to lose one or two votes.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not be concerned about giving Susan Collins the things that she feels that she needs to get on board, just so long as they can squeak through, as long as there's nobody else that they are concerned about losing. So they've still got to do some very careful counting, because there aren't Democrats who are going to vote with them unless Joe Manchin or Heidi Heitkamp decides to vote. Those are the two Democrats that the Dems are the most worried about, but they have not indicated that they are definitely going to vote with them but they are the ones that they have been more concerned about.
I can't see how they would vote with them, but stranger things have happened, I suppose.
Yeah, stranger things have happened. But at this point, I don't know that there's a major incentive for them to. Heidi Heitkamp gave some words earlier this week indicating that she saw some real problems with this bill for her constituents.
Well, there are a lot of problems with the bill for her constituents, for
yeah.
all of us, unless, you know, we're independently wealthy. Despite everything they say, this is just another example of them gaslighting the American people, saying this is middle class tax cuts when it's nothing of the sort. Because what we've learned, without an official score, by the way, this vote may come down before there's an official score on this bill, right?
Yes, most likely it will. And there's this very interesting story out in the New York Times about how the Treasury Secretary has been saying that there was going to be an analysis and that there were 100 people working on it in the Treasury Department and it was going to come out before the vote. And so the New York Times sort of did some digging on this, and they have a story out about how, well, no, there aren't 100 people working on it in the division of the Treasury Department that would be working on it. And in fact, one economist who spoke anonymously for fear of losing his job said, well, there is no analysis that like that being worked on. It's just not happening.
They just lie. They just lie with impunity. It's stunning.
So it's really very interesting. There's also a paragraph in the story about how some of the political appointees at the Treasury Department have been getting into it with some of the career appointees at the Treasury Department over analysis and wanting them to change things. And one person in particular, one man in particular, who's a career, like, you know, Treasury wonk, has been coming out of meetings visibly upset, and he's actually going to be leaving.
Of course.
He's going.
Because most of the people who were in it for the right reasons are leaving because they can't handle it anymore. The problem is when they leave, it leaves the fox being the hen house being guarded by the fox, so to speak.
This is I think what some people are seeing is as very distressing, which is that, you know, as people leave, it is leaving this gap. But people, you know, you hear from stories of people saying that they just simply cannot continue to work under those conditions. This is what people are saying when they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're not replaced. They're simply not replaced, and because they're just not filling positions.
Right. Like at the State Department. Now, let me ask you this. If they do, as the New York Times article today is saying, fire Rex Tillerson and put Mike Pompeo in there from the CIA, would he start filling some of those empty positions? In other words, was the paring down of the State Department Rex Tillerson's idea, or is this a Trump idea?
Well, it seems to have been, nobody really knows entirely, and I think it seems to be something that Trump would support, and there certainly doesn't seem to have been any pushback on it, but it seems to have been something that Tillerson has very much spearheaded, and there is this sense that he's been busy doing this rather than being involved in diplomacy and, really sort of getting on with that aspect of things, that this is what he's really been focused on. And this has been a real concern for a number of people at the State Department, and so that's really where things are. But he was scheduled to give a speech today, and he canceled it and went to the White House, which is where I am now. I don't know if he's still here or what happened, but once that story dropped earlier today, everything seemed to change. Now we don't know. President Trump is reputedly always loath to fire people and tends to change his mind many times. But Tillerson is said to have been on thin ice for some considerable time.
Right, exactly. And the New York Times story says it'll happen sometime in the next few weeks, this was a John Kelly plan. And I thought the plan was to have everyone remain in through the end of the year. So maybe that would work out
long
with this timing. No, not much longer at all. What else is going on?
Well, there are a number of things going on. Apparently, one thing is that they will be putting in a stopgap spending bill until about the 22nd of December, because they won't be able to sort out the government funding by
December 8th.
So
isn't
that
amazing?
One thing.
Oh my goodness. So shutdown time right before Christmas instead of earlier in the month.
Right. That's what it's looking like right now. That's what we're hearing. John Conyers, the representative from Michigan, will not resign. His attorney announced at a press conference in Detroit today. That decision sure as hell isn't up to Nancy Pelosi, his attorney said. She is jumping on the bandwagon now. Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, called for Conyers' resignation just moments before the press conference started. And James Clyburn also called for Conyers' resignation a few minutes after Nancy Pelosi. So it does seem as though you have a situation where senior Democrats are now calling for Conyers to resign. But he is not going to make that move at this time. Also, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Representative Adam Schiff from California, said today, this was after a closed-door meeting with Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the House Intelligence Committee, that Sessions did not answer whether President Trump ever asked him to obstruct the Russia investigation. Schiff said, I asked the Attorney General whether he was ever instructed by the President to take any action that he believed would hinder the Russia investigation, and he declined to answer the question. So, and Schiff said, if the President did not instruct him to take any action that he believed would hinder the investigation, he should say so. If the President did instruct him to hinder the investigation in any way, in my view, that would be a potentially criminal act and certainly not covered by any privilege. Now, they also, and now Sessions' spokeswoman was saying that, well, he didn't remember a lot of things, and Schiff is saying, well, we asked him about a lot of previous testimony. So this story, I think, is going to develop throughout the day as a kind of he said, he said.
Right, but if he wouldn't answer the question, isn't that sort of guilt by omission?
Well, I think what they're saying is that, first of all, that he is saying that he has repeatedly said that he would not talk about his communications with the president, and that he's also denied previously when he's been testifying being instructed by Trump to do anything that was improper or against the law.
Right. All right.
So, yeah, but there seems to be that, you know, Sessions is saying that he didn't remember.
Right. Well, that seems to be his go-to answer for just about everything these days.
There seems to be an element of misremembering.
Yes. I do not recall.
Yes, so there does seem to be some of that. Meanwhile, the backlash from Britain to President Trump's retweeting of three very anti-Islam videos has really picked up steam today with a session in Parliament, a hastily called session in Parliament debate, where members of Parliament from both sides of the aisle were lining up to condemn Trump.
Wow.
I mean, lining up. Some parliamentarians were mocking Trump as stupid. And that's not a word they use that often in the House of Commons. Stephen Doughty, who's a Labour Party lawmaker, told Parliament, by sharing it, he is either a racist, incompetent, or unthinking, or all three.
Yes. Now they know what we're dealing with.
But he went on to say, I love America. And he said his great-grandfather was an American soldier. He said he traveled extensively in the States. He said it's a country and people of extraordinary generosity, courage, kindness, and humanity. But this president represents none of those things.
I can't say I disagree with him. This and the excuses that they're making, you know, for the videos not being authentic or not being real, and Sarah Sanders coming out and saying it doesn't matter if they're real or not. This is what did she say? It doesn't matter if they're real. The threat is real.
The threat is real. The threat is real was her point. Yeah, the threat is real.
So whoever it is who put these things out make up a story about a Muslim immigrant beating up a Dutch boy, and it couldn't be any further from the truth as they investigated who the people were in this video, and the kid doing the beating was neither Muslim or an immigrant, and it doesn't matter that it purports to be that because the threat is real. I mean, it's all those things. It's racist, it's stupid, it's bigoted, it's ugly, and I can't believe this is coming from the President of the United States.
It came also, and I think this is one of the things that is surprising to so many people, that it came just 2 days after the Pocahontas incident.
Yes.
With Elizabeth Warren during a celebration of Native American, you know, Navajo code talkers.
It's mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Anything else we need to know about today?
other things we need to know about today, I would say, Rasmussen, the conservative-leaning polling company.
Yes.
They did a poll on fake news.
Ooh.
Because, as you know, President Trump called for a fake news trophy.
Yeah.
So they did the poll.
Did Fox win?
And, Fox won.
As they should. Well, wow, they got one right.
Yeah, 40% of respondents think Fox News should get the fake news trophy.
Mm-hmm.
25% said CNN should get it. MSNBC was 9%. ABC, CBS, and NBC all received less than 5%.
Wow. Wow.
Well,
they got that one right. I've been talking
That's interesting. Yes.
Fake news from Fox for years now. And Donald Trump says he coined that phrase. Just one more thing that he's taking credit for. Anyway, Victoria Jones, Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. Always a pleasure, Victoria. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. It is Thursday. That means Howie Klein will be joining us in just a moment. So stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Every Thursday, right around this time, we get together with Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America PAC to talk about what's going on in our electoral world. Hi, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole. I hope you're well.
I'm doing very well. Thank you. And you?
I'm well, too. I just had to make a choice. It was no real choice, but... someone from Politico just called me to interview me, and I said, I can't do it now. I'm doing a Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I would love for Politico to talk to you and talk about...
It was about Taylor Swift.
Oh, what about Taylor Swift?
Exactly.
All right. Some things are more important than others. I was just talking to Victoria Jones, our news person, about a poll that Rasmussen, which is a very right-leaning poll, did a poll on fake news because, Trump said he wanted to give out the award. And they got it right. Fox won by a fairly hefty margin.
Well, they were 40%, and CNN was number two at 25%. So it's a really big difference. And then some of the other news outlets or sources of news were very small. I mean, number three was MSNBC at only 9%.
Mm-hmm.
I think ABC was like 4%. So it really really is Fox News that people, most Americans, realize is the source of fake news. The horror there is that President Senor, Senor Trumpanzee, just sits in front of the TV all day. He doesn't have any job to do other than ceremonial things occasionally. And he just sits in front of Fox TV with Fox on, and that is his source of news, which is horrifying.
It really is. That, and I don't know if there's a Sinclair station in the D.C. area, or so he may soon have another outlet, because once the Sinclair takeover of the Tribune stations goes through, there are going to be a lot more TV stations that look like local TV news that are echoing a right-wing ideology, which is really frightening because a lot of people don't know the difference. They don't know when content is being mandated to a station as must run, which is what Sinclair is going to do with all their 80 some odd stations they have now. and they will have upwards of over 200 once this deal goes through.
Hmm. I have a feeling that Trump is the kind of guy, you know, he's an old man and his brain is sort of a little bit calcified. And I don't think he changes too much or too rapidly. I kind of get the feeling that he's set in his ways and he's going to just sit in front of that TV and watch Fox and watch Fox and watch Fox. And every now and then when he wants to torture himself, he'll put on CNN or CNBC.
Right.
MSNBC.
Right, right. And that's the problem, I think, with a lot of older people. They get brainwashed by that stuff. I think that's what happened to him. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a movie.
I agree. The other part of that story, by the way, which wasn't actually in the story, is that as American voters, because I think that's who they were polling, was likely voters, and as likely voters are polled on Trump's own ability to be honest and to be a source of something that is trustworthy, that's been going down every month, and it's at its lowest point right now. So most Americans may find that Fox is an unreliable source of news or a source of fake news. They find the same thing with Trump, that he is an unreliable source of news. In fact, I was looking at a poll that was done, and it was put out by CNN. They didn't do the polling, just a nonpartisan firm did the polling, but it was put out by CNN a couple of weeks ago, and it showed that only, I think, 20% of Americans will believe what the White House puts out in official communications. Most Americans either don't trust too much of what the White House puts out, or trust nothing. I mean, there would literally something like a third of all Americans say that whatever the White House says, they just don't believe it anyway.
Well, and for good reason. I mean, because we've seen this White House just lie about everything from that very first day when Sean Spicer came out and lied about the size of the inaugural crowd. From that day on, it's been nothing but lies. So,
yep.
You know,
we've got Sarah Huckabee.
Right. And now it's Huckabee. Right. The really sad thing is that it doesn't matter that the American people are coming around and seeing that this White House lies. We have no say in the matter until the next time we vote. Right now, there's a new Reuters Ipsos poll that was released last night on this tax scam bill, and 49% of Americans who are aware of it are opposed to it. Only 29% support it. So, but it doesn't matter. They may pass this thing tonight.
They may. It may pass. I have a suspicion that it will. And at that point, it goes back to the House, and either they have to put together a conference committee, an ad hoc conference committee, to then try to make one bill, and then it goes back to the Senate and back to the House. Or, and this may happen, the House may say, hey, this is too dangerous. We'll just vote on the Senate bill and we'll just pass it as it is. So that could happen also. And then we're screwed.
Right. We are really screwed. So there's polling that says the people are coming around, but it doesn't matter because now Congress, this Republican-led Congress and White House are just running with it. You know, they control it all. So it's up to us to turn things around the best we can. And our next chance is November of 2018. Now, you have a piece up at Down with Tyranny that talks about another poll that shows that Americans don't want either Nancy Pelosi or Paul Ryan as our next Speaker of the House.
Right. So the reason I was writing about that was because the head of the NRCC, so that's the Republican version of the DCCC.
Right.
There, the NRCC is charged with keeping Republican incumbents in office and electing new Republicans. And they know it's going to be a disastrous cycle for them. But the head of it, the executive director, was saying in this interview that I read that their main weapon, like the number one weapon for the Republicans against the Democrats, is to paint every Democrat as a Nancy Pelosi puppet. They know that Nancy Pelosi is very unpopular, and they've been cultivating a definition of Nancy Pelosi for years and years. I mean, it was funny when she became the first woman to have, and the only woman to have ever been the Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. her popularity was sky high, and the Republicans just went about attacking her in a very personal way and doing everything they could to undermine her and to make her anathema and just lying about her, and trying to do everything they could to make Americans hate her. And to some extent, I mean, Republicans were already prone to do that, but they've had some impact on actually on Democrats, but where they've really had their impact is in independent voters. So overall, the voters don't like her. But the Democrats haven't done the same thing with Paul Ryan, and yet Paul Ryan is slightly less popular than Nancy Pelosi. So Nancy Pelosi is not liked by a lot of Americans. Well, Paul Ryan is not liked by even more Americans. But the Democrats don't exploit it the way that the Republicans do. So if you remember when John Ossoff ran, mm-hmm. the Republicans spent literally millions of dollars on radio, TV, and print ads trying to tie John Ossoff to Nancy Pelosi. The Democrats never do that with Paul Ryan. They don't know how. They don't understand it, and it offends them to try to do something like that. So they don't do it. But in the case of Ossoff, the guy who was running in Georgia a few months back, since he was unable to define himself, he was sort of a wishy-washy candidate. He didn't know what he was. Was he going to be a liberal? Was he going to be a conservative? He didn't know. He was one thing one day and something else the other day. And because he didn't effectively define himself, the Republicans stepped right in, and they were happy to define him for him. Mm-hmm. For him. And they defined him as a Nancy Pelosi puppet. And since he didn't have anything better to say, that's what the voters decided to go along with. And they didn't want that. And he was defeated. So I've talked to a lot of candidates who are running in 2018 about what they plan to do and how they're going to inoculate themselves from not a theory. I mean, the head of the NRCC has already said this is what we're going to do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he wasn't shy. He said, yes, we're going to tie every one of their candidates to Nancy Pelosi. So I asked candidates, you know, in light of what this guy is threatening to do and certainly has done before and will do, what are you going to do? So, you know, and if you go to my blog and you can read that post, I thought that the answers were very interesting, and there are something like 12 different candidates who had 12 different ideas about how to do it. But afterwards, I was talking with a candidate who told me it was too late to include, the post was already out, but he told me that he had been at a couple of Democratic club meetings in his district. He has a primary, so he's the way that you campaign in these things is you go to the Democratic clubs in your district and you make your case and you answer questions. And he said all of the candidates were asked the same question, among others. They asked them, what are you going to do when the Republicans come after you as a Nancy Pelosi clone? And he laughed, and he just went after it and said, you know, I am not a Nancy Pelosi clone. She's the past. I'm the future. She doesn't represent the same things I believe in, and I have every intention of campaigning on the issues that I believe in, which are, you know, different from the issues that she believes in. So he was very, very aggressive, and this is in front of not in front of Republicans and not in front of independents. This is in front of other Democrats who presumably have a positive feeling about Nancy Pelosi. But he was endorsed by the club anyway, by overwhelmingly against four other candidates who are also running for that same seat.
Well, that's good. You mentioned that the Democrats aren't repositioning Paul Ryan, but they have Steve Bannon doing that for them. Steve Bannon is running a campaign against the mainstream Republicans in terms of Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, isn't he?
Yes, and that's somewhat effective, and that's good. But remember, he's aiming that directly at Republicans. Mm-hmm. So he's not, although it obviously bleeds over to independents and Democrats to some tiny effect. He's really trying to get hardcore Trump voters to hate Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell isn't up for office, and it's not going to do any good. But it is hurting Paul Ryan in his own district, where there are some Republicans who are already saying that they're going to sit out the 2018 race and they don't want to vote for Paul Ryan, which is great for Randy Bryce,
right,
the Democrat who's running against him.
How are things going for Randy now?
Really well. I spent some time with him this week. He flew in for one day, I think, to do a TV show that's going to be on tonight with Sarah Silverman.
So
I went to the taping with him, and things are looking really good. And he shared some polling data with me that's not sort of released to the public, but that looked really good. And we talked about the things he's doing. The guy is like just really working so hard. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he was doing stuff in his own district, of course, that's where it's most important. Mm-hmm. And then got on a plane, flew here, went right to this taping, which, I don't know if you've ever been to one of these kind of tapings. I bet you have. And they're really not very glamorous, and they do them over and over again. And it's real work. I mean, it was a lot of work for Sarah, and it was a lot of work for the audience, and it was a lot of work for Randy. But I even felt it was a lot of work for me just sitting there and watching.
This is for her Hulu show?
And then after that, he went to a dinner that a bunch of people threw for him, and then got on a plane immediately and flew up to San Francisco, where he was making an address to the Iron Workers Union. I want to say of California. I'm not 100%. If it was California or just San Francisco, but he went and talked to the Iron Workers Union, and then got on another plane immediately after that to fly, I think, to Boston to do another speech.
Wow.
I mean, the guy is just working so hard. I'm like really proud of him.
Great. So this
and
is...
I can see why he's so successful. I mean, he's raised more money than any, and all of it in small donations. He's raised more money than any candidate that's running for Congress anywhere in the country, including obviously every single DCCC candidate, and they're recruiting very wealthy candidates and people who have wealthy supporters on their Rolodexes. Lots and lots of corporate attorneys. I mean, they don't call them that. They'll say, "Oh yes, he was a." An Iraq War veteran,
uh-huh.
And that may be true,
right?
But he's also a corporate attorney,
right?
But if they don't talk about it. And a corporate attorney is likely to have lots of money and likely to be friends with people that have lots of money and able to do that. Randy's getting his money from just regular folks who are giving $10 and $20. His average donation, he told me what it was. It was either $21 to $22. I don't remember exactly, but it was definitely the first number was a two. And that's because people believe in what he has to say, and he's not talking about himself. He's talking about what he wants to do for people when he gets to Congress, and that's a big difference when people are like instead saying I am this and I did this and I. And I think people are sick of that already, and they want to know what the government, what their representative in the government is going to do for them.
Sure.
And that's Randy. That's what he's all about. That's why he's running.
And that's why he's doing so well, because he seems to be in it for the right reasons. So this Sarah Silverman show, this is her Hulu show, the I Love You America or something?
Right. I Love You America. It's on, and I think the show that she taped with Randy the night before last is on tonight.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll have to check that out. So, Howie Klein, there was more news this week that Congressman Gutierrez of Illinois is not going to run for re-election. You have another post up at Down with Tyranny about the primary season being far more important than the DCCC wants you to think it is. And Congressman Gutierrez has already endorsed Chuy Garcia, who we remember from the mayoral election, to replace him. I didn't realize that Jan Schakowsky had such a good progressive voting record.
Oh, yeah. Jan has one of the best. Well, she certainly has the best in the whole state of Illinois, but she has one of the best in the country.
That's
She's
great.
A very stalwart and consistent progressive.
Good for her. So,
yeah. Chewy's, if he gets in, he's liable to be even better. He's certainly going to be as good. Chewy would be great. The other guy who's running as well, if you have that in front of you, I'm in a different room right now, so I don't have it in front of me, but the other guy who's running is a really good, solid Bernie-crat as well. So far, at least, at least there are two really good candidates. I mean, it's likely that Chewy's going to win. He's got a great name recognition. I believe that district, the fourth congressional district, is the only district in the city of Chicago that went for Bernie. And it went for Bernie quite heavily in the primary in Illinois. If you remember, Illinois was a Hillary state, and a lot of the downstate areas went for Bernie, but Cook County, which is Chicago basically, and the environs went for Hillary very, very strongly. But that one district, the fourth district, which is extremely heavily Latino, that wound up being a Bernie district. So there's every reason to believe that that Chewy is going to wind up being the candidate. Although, like I said, the other kid that's running, the youngest alderman.
Yep. Yeah, Carlos Ramirez Rosa. You're right.
Carlos.
A Democratic socialist and former aide to Gutierrez, an openly gay man and the youngest Chicago alderman, was a Bernie delegate at the convention.
Yeah. So, in other words, what I'm saying is here we have a situation. They're likely to be, I'm sure the Cook County machine will put in some horrible conservative fake Democrat. But here we have two really excellent candidates. I don't know Carlos. I have never met him. But everything I've read about him and everyone I know who does know him is telling me glowing things about him. I do know Chewy, and I know him pretty well, and he's amazing. I mean, he would be a great member of Congress. And the point of my story, in fact, was we have an opportunity, not just in that district, but all over the country, not just to replace Republicans, but to make the Congress a lot more progressive, make the Democratic Party inside of Congress a lot more progressive. Now, the DCCC is fighting, tooth and nail to make sure that doesn't happen, of course. They want to win Congress back for the Democrats, but they don't want to win it back with progressives. They're doing all they can to bolster conservative Democrats, Blue Dogs, New Dems, ex-Republicans. And when I say ex-Republicans, one of the people who I admire the most in politics in this country is Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
Elizabeth Warren is an ex-Republican.
Yep.
Every ex-Republican should be just like her. She's not just someone who has a D in front of her or behind her name now instead of an R. She's someone who completely is helping to define what a Democrat is in terms of what Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt believed in. I mean, she's as good as you're going to ever find anywhere. And she's an ex-Republican. But when I use the term ex-Republican, I'm not talking about someone like Elizabeth Warren. I'm talking about someone like, say, in your state, Charlie Crist.
Right.
Charlie Crist was a Republican,
yeah.
A Republican office holder. They basically wound up kicking him out of the party, and he just changed to be an independent. And then when he decided to run again, he changed to be a Democrat. But when you look at his voting record, it's not a Democratic voting record. He's voting with the Republicans I don't know where it is right now, but at one time it was overwhelmingly he's voting with the Republicans. Mm-hmm. The last time I looked at it, it was about 50-50. And he's a blue dog. He's still, you know, backs all of the terrible ideas that he had when he was attorney general. He was one of the worst attorney generals Florida ever had. And then he became governor, and he was a so-so governor for a Republican. But he's still a Republican. And there are lots and lots of these ex-Republicans who are in Congress, who the DCCC recruits to run. So it's not like they just happen to show up and the DCCC says, okay. The DCCC goes out and finds them and brings them in. I'm telling you, there are dozens and dozens of them who are running now all over the country. Anywhere where you are, there's a very, very good chance that the fake Democrat that the DCCC is backing is an so-called ex-Republican who's going to get into Congress and just vote with the GOP. That's what they are. It's horrifying. It's ugly. Terrible. I mean, in some of these races where there are primaries, you've got a couple of these like in Hawaii. Did I introduce you to Kaniela Ng yet?
No. I
know I was supposed to. Did I do that yet?
No.
I've got to introduce you to this guy. Kaniela is one of the best candidates running anywhere in the country. He's one of the leaders of the Hawaiian legislature.
Okay.
And he's very, very young. He's still in his 20s, but he's been in the legislature already for like 6 or 7 years. So he's a really experienced guy, and he knows how government works. And he's, you know, what I like to call the tip of the spear when it comes to progressive policy in Hawaii. The guy is amazing. And the idea of getting someone like him in Congress would be incredible. But he has three opponents. And, I mean, when I say ex-Republican, how about this? One of his opponents 3 months ago was the head of the Republican Party in the state legislature.
Oh, my God.
She was the minority leader of the Republican Party. Nothing about her has changed, except now instead of an R after her name, she has a D after her name. That's the only change.
Wow.
They threw her out of leadership, and that's why she changed her party. They threw her out of leadership because she hated Trump. But, you know, you and I have talked about this before. Being anti-Trump is not the same thing as being progressive. It's not even
exactly
the same thing as being a Democrat.
Nope.
But, you know, that's what she's running on, that she's an anti-Trump former Republican. Well, you know, look at her. She's anti-choice. She's virulently anti-gay. She doesn't believe in any of the economics that Democrats believe in. She's literally absolutely horrible, and she's running, and, you know, Emily Liz loves her. I mean, they're mourning all over her. But there's another Democrat who's running, who is the president of the state Senate, and she's even more conservative than the Republican.
Wow.
And she's also horrible. I mean, again, totally anti-gay. She was, although not anti-choice, she's anti-contraception. I mean, a religious nut. And these people could wind up getting into one of the bluest seats in America as a Democrat with the support of organizations, you know, conservative organizations like the DCCC, like Emily's List, like the Blue Dogs, like the New Dems. I mean, they love these kind of people. Corrupt as can be, taking money from all of the wrong places, doing favors for all the people that give them money. You know, they have records. There are records of these people taking all of this bad money and then voting for all of this kind of corporate legislation. I mean, that was why when Randy first started running, I was so happy to see he immediately announced he's taking no money from Wall Street. He's taking no money from anything that has to do with oil or coal. He said, I don't want your money. Don't give it to me. I'm not interested. And that's awesome. I mean, that's why we have to support people like him and people like Kaniela. Kaniela's the same way. He won't take any of that kind of stuff.
That's great. See, this is why it's so important when you write about primaries. I try to stress those posts, and I'll put links on my blog to both of the posts that we talked about today. Up on the blog. Primaries are so important. This is the chance we have to make a difference, to get real progressives in there, to go against, you know, the DCCC's picks, the conservadems they're trying to foist on us, and get real progressives in there to make a difference.
Right. You know, there's another one in Chicago, the third district. There's a blue dog named Dan Lipinski. Again, anti-gay, anti-choice, voted against the against Obamacare. He's been in there for a long time. He's as conservative as a Republican. Just terrible. And there's a woman named Marie Newman who's running against him. And this week, Move On, DFA, the PCCC, and NARAL all joined in the battle to help her get elected.
Oh, good.
Blue America endorsed her about 7 or 8 months ago, and I was so happy this week to see all the other good progressive organizations come in to help her. And that's pretty unprecedented when you have a Democratic incumbent, even a blue dog incumbent like that, for people to go in to help. So that's to help the progressive.
That's great.
So I really felt good about that.
All right. Howie Klein, we're out of time. Our time just flies by when we talk on Thursdays. Thank you. We'll do it again next week.
All right. I'll send you an introduction to Kenyella.
Terrific. Thanks so much. Howie Klein from DownWithTyranny.com and the Blue America PAC on the Nicole Sandler Show. We'll see you tomorrow.